Welcome to the Estate Professionals Mastermind Podcast, a podcast for estate professionals who earn more, work less, and make a huge difference in their communities. If you get value out of this free content, be sure to check out probatemastery.com, where you can get live classes, access to weekly coaching, and valuable courses. To learn more, visit probatemastery.com. Now let's jump into this week's content.
Welcome, I'm Bill Gross, and welcome to our weekly Probate Mastery Coaching Call. We do this every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. We do this at, which is 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and everything in between and on either side. I'm sorry I'm running a little late. I have several Zoom accounts, and somehow this one didn't log in properly, but we're up and running now. This coaching call is associated with Probate Mastery. You can go to probatemastery.com and get the details of the program. There's free courses that I think are worth taking a look at. I always recommend people to get the free material. I think it will help set the table for you and help launch you in the right direction. You want to get certified, which I think is important, particularly when working with attorneys, but also just get the full background of the program. There's details there. And then lastly, there's additional course bundles. You can continue the conversation on Facebook, on the Facebook community, which is Estate Probates Mastermind. And there's Bruce Hill, the proprietor, and there's questions and conversations and referrals and such that you can look at there. Separately, I host a program called Probate Weekly, probateweekly.com. You can sign up here and you'll get an email reminder, scroll down and get the audio posts and or past episodes on YouTube. Okay, so we do this every week, and the goal here is this is a coaching call. It's meant, I'm a practitioner. I'm in Los Angeles, California. I take listings and sell property every day for a living, focus all my marketing and business development in the area of probate. I literally just got the phone interviewing a probate and trust attorney in New York. I'm going to connect with you, Natasha, about that information. And so that's what I do for a living. I'm not a coach telling you how things were done 10 years ago, or I'm not telling you what to do because I couldn't do it. I am telling you what I'm doing every single day. I'll share with you what's working, what's not working for me. And then those you can share best practices, your victories, your losses, and we can all work together and be better. Feel free to jump in, unmute yourself. If you have a question, raise your hand, put it in the chat box. It's meant to be participative. The goal of this is to interact. If I could just record content and put it on, I would record a bunch of content, take off the rest of the year, and you guys, but you need, I believe we all need the interaction. We all need to work together. We all need the best practices. We all need to get some encouragement or maybe get some advice on to stop doing what's not working. So who's got a question, comment, raise your hand, chat box, unmute yourself. And then until somebody gets started, I just thought I would share with you guys kind of a thought process. If I said to you that, I mean, I had this thought literally when COVID started, maybe some of you else went through that, that we might be in for a prolonged period of depression, not of just a bad economy like I've experienced in my lifetime, but what if we had a depression on the scale of 1929? What if we had to live through the life like my parents did, where so many people were out of work, so many economies were wiped out, where people really adjusted their entire way of life to be focused on survival rather than, you know, watching online Netflix. What might you do? And so some of the things you could think about it, if you really believed, no matter how wealthy you are, because if you're wealthy, you want to be economical to take advantage of the opportunity perhaps, or be able to help other people with your excess, right? So what are some things you might do? So one thing you might do is buy things a bit in bulk to get cheaper prices, right? And so that's one of the things I started back at COVID and I still today. We buy more and more of our paper goods and things around the house in bulk because it's just cheaper. And with inflation going up, it can't hurt. You have toilet paper, you buy it in January and 6 months later, it's gone up 10, 15%. You save money. It's almost like a good investment. And so a couple of things you might think about if you were prepared for that. One is you'd buy in bulk. You would cut down on waste. You would review all your expenditures. Those are things I did when COVID hit. Look for look for ways to turn things into money-making operations that aren't otherwise. And so personally, in this business, There's my wife's dog walking around out of the lockup. That's what that's all about. Hey there, Lola. Eric. So what are things that we might do in this business? So I would say to you, things like, how else can you make money while you're doing the main thing, not instead of, but while you're doing the main thing, right? So, or that's one question. Now there's, what are expenses that you assume you have to have every week that maybe you don't really need? Or what are things you're buying that you could buy in bulk? Or what are things that you're doing you could prepay and save some money at and be more diligent about that? So just think about, I think that we are in for a very challenging period real estate wise. I feel like there's a vise getting tighter all the time on the overall economy. I'm doing really well. My income is really good. I built a business, not just commission flow, so that I have numerous things growing for my business. And as a result, I'm looking to take advantage, take the opportunity for building wealth for me and my family and for the communities that depend on me. And I urge you to do the same, whether or not you need it to pay the bills or you're doing well, this is your chance to step up. But these transitions are when we have the opportunity to make a difference. And the thing I always think about, I have in my life several times watched marathon races. I never ran a marathon. I rode a marathon and a bike, but I never actually ran a marathon. And I helped a guy who was running it. But if you watch like the Olympic marathon race, what you'll notice is that at mile 20, many of the racers slow down, but the champion's the one who speeds up and passes people. Like they're going uphill at mile 20. When it's tough for other people, that's the time that you make your move. And that's the business I think that we're in today, that the things that I'm looking at is, talking to more people per hour worked, finding ways to get more leads at the same time, distributing more leads to more people to keep them engaged in my business, right? So being a little more careful to try to hook that lead and then send it to somebody rather than just refer them and wonder what happens from it. But also be clear in what I do and discuss my value proposition really clearly. I'll tell you a quick story. So I have a great attorney who I've done good work for him and he's And as a result, he gave me a referral for a customer who I chased and chased, and he wanted to meet with me like on a Wednesday morning. Oh, it was a Monday morning. And I generally don't go out to properties anymore, but I may agree because it was a good attorney to go to the case. And he canceled an hour before the meeting. It was a 9 a.m. meeting, and he canceled at 8 a.m. Now, I'd sent him, unlike most realtors, before we met, a CMA, and I sent him a proposed contract package to review a couple days before. So I said, here's a chance to review this. We could talk about before I show up, but this is what we're going to talk about when I show up. And rather than have the integrity to call me with questions, or rather than have the integrity to call the attorney with questions, or rather than have the integrity to cancel the appointment, he waited until an hour before. And then he told the attorney, well, my commission was too high. And I was charging 5%, not 6, not 7, but 5, which is the most common rate in my market, though many people charge 6. And I was offering 2.5, 2.5, which is the most common in my market. Many charge 4 and 2, 3 and 2, 3.5, 1.5. But rather than talk about it, he just decided on his own and kind of avoided me for a couple of weeks. And the attorney's, what's wrong? Can't get a hold of the guy. So I've probably called, texted, or emailed him 30, 40 times. And then he tells the attorney, my commission's too high. And the attorney asked me if I'd cut the commission. I said, well, to be honest, normally I'd be glad to cut the commission for your clients. But to be honest, he's already out of integrity. He's already wasted a lot of my time. And we're even in contract yet on the listing side. If he's this painful to work with today, what's it going to be like to get his house into contract? What's it going to be like to get the escrow closed? Harder than average or easier than average? Harder than average. So I said, if you insist, I'll do it for you. I'll work hard for you. But just know I'm not doing it for the client because he's really wasted time. And I would caution you, when you give in to people like this, it's never ending. They don't respect you or appreciate your time. It will not grow because you make a concession without a reasonable pushback. And so I kind of forgot about that. That was about a month ago. What's funny is On another case with his attorney, I'm the fiduciary. I'm acting on behalf of the estate. And the realtor in that proposed to me 6%, 4% to him and 2% to the buyer's agent. And I talked to the attorney. I said, listen, I know this case came from this other realtor, but I have listings in the same market at 5% and 2.5%. How can I be the fiduciary and look out for the estate and pay the realtor 4% and only 2% to the co-op of the 6%? When that's not what I'm charging. How can I do it for somebody else when that's not what I'm doing on my own business? And the attorney said, you're right, that's not reasonable. I said, but it's funny that on the other case, your client, I offered 5% and 2.5%, and he thought that wasn't good enough. Isn't it interesting how it's all relative to the relationship? And so that's just a long way of saying you're going to win some and lose some. And the more you put yourself out there, the more you're going to lose, but also the more you're going to win. And I think it's really important to not get caught up with problem customers just because you're desperate. I'm not going to lower my standard. Would I do it for the attorney? Yes. If he said to me, Bill, I need you to because I need this case, fine, I'll do it. I'll do it for free. I'll walk through walls for him. But I'm not going to take the commission by lowering my commission to get the listing because that doesn't work. Does that make sense? So it's all negotiable. I don't know where that lawsuit nonsense comes from. I would love to meet that attorney in St. Louis. I'd love to meet the plaintiff in St. Louis, who is an attorney, by the way, who claims he was victimized by being forced into signing a bad contract. But I'll just say the business is competitive. Our commissions are negotiable, but we're in business. This isn't a commission job. This is my business. And we have to do things that make sense for our business. Okay, that's my soapbox for today. We've got 43 people on here. Some of you have questions, challenges, problems, victories you want to share with us. Raise your hand up, put in the chat box, unmute yourself. Let's get the party started. Anybody?
Hey, Bill. Good morning. This is Philip Nunez here in Los Angeles.
Hey, Philip. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Outstanding. What's up?
So quick question. I have, you probably heard this before, but so I sometimes do connect with the administrator of the estate early in the process. Of course, they're not able to make any decisions at that time. Then, you know, a few weeks go by and then some of the challenges that I come across is either I'm having a hard time getting it back on the phone or, you know, just kind of the follow-up because there's like a 3 to 4 week lapse there. And then obviously by then they get probably overwhelmed with calls. How do you make a strong enough impact early on to have them either reach out to you, which I mean, that hasn't happened to me yet, but, or at bare minimum, answer the phone when I am calling. Is there any advice on that?
Well, in some regards, I need to hit, where's the microphone? Here it is. I'm battling a cough, guys. Sorry about that. In some regards, there's the basic fundamental sales. This isn't any different, which is, I came up in the Mike Ferry method, which was expires for some of my owners, and a lot of chasing leads. A lot of chasing leads. And nothing wrong with it if that works for you and that's where you are. But I would say to you, you probably have to chase, just to use the Grant Cardone methodology, 10 times the leads that you think you are chasing. You think you have one or two people that you're calling back and you need like 10 or 20. You have 10 or 20 you're calling back, you need like 100 to 200. It's just numbers.
Right.
Good news, bad news. It's just numbers. So that's part of the problem, is the numbers of people you have to talk to. The second is the intensity of your follow-up, creating value for them, because too often we're content to get somebody to talk to us and say, oh yeah, call me back in a month. Okay, well, what's going to happen in a month? And if the answer is really nothing, then you're just, it's a nice way to say, I'm not interested. Right? I'm sorry about that. There's a famous book about dating It was written for women, called He's Just Not That Into You. Women had the experience of being asked out on a date. They go out, have dinner, whatever. And the guy didn't call back. And the girlfriends would say, she'd ask girlfriends, why is he not calling me back? The answer is, he's just not that into you. It's not that you weren't pretty. It's not that you weren't nice. It's just, he's not that into you. That's sales. You got to make your prospects that into you, they call you back. So the problem is, if you're just cold calling, you get a list from a source and you talk to them. And they say, you know, we won't have letters for 30 days. That doesn't necessarily mean 30 days from now, you're my best friend. It just means 30 days from now, I have to make a decision. I may have told you I've talked to other realtors. So we're too quick to accept that. I'll call back in 30 days, then you have letters. And then if I'm the person calling you, I get the deal. It doesn't quite work that way. So I would always try to say, what's the next step in the relationship, right? If the next step is waiting, that's not really a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So the next step, for example, you're here in LA, I would urge you to watch Paul Horn's certification class on probate in California. And Phil, what brokerage are you with?
eXp Realty.
Okay. So you should review this with one of your eXp brokers, like I have. For those of you listening at other companies, review this with a broker, because that's always, if you're an agent, your license is under the broker. You have to make sure you follow the company rules. But Paul Horn, who's one of the most prolific attorneys in LA County, describes a process where you can sign a listing before they have the letters issued. Now, this is a controversial procedure, as long as it's disclosed to all parties that the contract isn't enforceable. Why would you do that? Because the client might like you to go to the property, secure the property, drive the property, walk the property, put signs up on the property. Who knows? And so I use that as one way to get them at least saying, listen, this isn't enforceable, but at least tells me that you're interested in working with me. It is fascinating to me how, let me back up. When I was a newer agent, I would use a buyer broker agreement. And in my buyer consult, I would show the customer all the forms they have to sign to get into contract, purchase agreement form and all the other forms. And I'd say, hey, this is just a sample. I put a line through it. Just go ahead and practice signing and see what it feels like to sign a contract. And it was amazing to me how hard it was for most people to sign even a practice contract. Mm. So I feel like even though while the form isn't enforceable, it does meet a certain emotional threshold that people won't frivolously sign that contract with you. Now you have to know that they could cancel any time. And if you can put in the MLS, you have to disclose that as well. And again, talk to the broker, make sure you're clear on those procedures. That's from Paul Horn on the CAR certification for probate in California. In other states, I don't know what the procedures are. But I think my point of that is to say, is there a next step? Maybe it's not a contract. Maybe it's you agree to go drive the property. Maybe it's you agree to get keys for the property, get it rekeyed. Maybe what can you do to move the relationship forward besides wait for them to get approved?
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Good. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for suffering through my cough there. Okay, well, we got a nurse on hand. Nurse Melanie, if you want to prescribe some antibiotic or something, feel free to step in. Give me a shot or whatever it is. Okay, questions. Let's see here. I see Lou on the call. Welcome, Lou. And if you look at Jeff Box, he's saying hi to everybody and has a little link there if you want to have a consult to find out. Now, Lou, I don't see you in the... I can't invite you in to talk, but if you have something you want to say, feel free to mute yourself and say hi. Otherwise, Melanie, what's going on?
All right. So I know you were just talking a little bit about ways that you can get in front of people that are free or less expensive. And I know last week we mentioned that I sent out my first newsletter. And I just wanted to give you a little update on the numbers. They look really pretty good. Actually, I had like a 41% open rate. And
nice. Now, what are you using to track that? What program?
Crazy. So I'm on MailChimp.
Great.
First time sending out a major newsletter since Christmas. And this is, you know, everyone in my sphere, you know, the senior sphere, you know, from nursing homes, assisted living, people that put heads in beds and things like that. And the numbers were pretty outrageous. The only ones that bounced, there was like 32 that bounced out of like 450, but those were to maybe like organizations, like the hospices and things like that. Only 4 people unsubscribed. Seriously, this is just outrageous. So my little takeaway for everyone is get that newsletter set up, get it out in front of everyone, and it's free on MailChimp up to 500 contacts, I believe. And that could mean total emails per month. And once you go about, you know, beyond that, then it's like $20 a month. So I think we're just going to subscribe to that and send them out, you know, maybe every week or every other week, and really just stay consistently in front of my my sphere. But I also put videos in there that go right to my YouTube channel and all my social channels.
So I'll put a link in the chat box for a free trial at MailChimp. Mm-hmm. It's a service I recommend. I use for my email as well, because you can get an open ratio. You can see clicks on different links, which links are being clicked, which ones are not. And they have a free trial, I think, up to $1,000 no credit card, or $5,000 with a credit card. Definitely worth checking into using. And then if you're an eXp agent, you can connect your KV Core account to your MailChimp account, so the contacts get thrown in automatically, which is convenient as well. But I do an email masterclass on email. I think it's such an important foundation. And so congratulations, Melanie. So 40%, how many people did you send it out to?
I think it's like 450, I think, total, maybe less than that, over 400. So the numbers are really good. I just lost it. 157 open, 12 clicks, 32 bounce, 4 unsubscribe. But I can literally see who opened them. Mm-hmm. And what links they went to and how many times they clicked on my email. And the people that you want to be looking are open. One of the guys opened it 20 times, 20.
So
they're watching. You think they're not looking, they're looking.
So a couple of things. Also, the ones that bounce or are bad addresses often are just typos that you can correct if you check the errors. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, this gets to the concepts I talk about in my email mastermind class, but just, you know, good fundamentals, which is imagine if all your contacts are in your database, if they're not. And so for most real estate agents, we have so many that are sitting in various other places, our transaction software or our someplace else. And so we want to go through and get all of our contacts into our database, because if 40% are going to open the email, you know, another 100 contacts, another 40 people opening your email.
Yeah, it takes a minute to do it, but I'll be honest with you, really incredible. So 381 successful deliveries and 329 total opens. So that's really good, and that's fantastic. Free. Fantastic. Really, yeah. So I highly recommend it. That's my piece for this week.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I just think email is such an important part for everybody that, you know, I do think I use social media, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Rumble, Twitch. I use all of that stuff. Email is a foundation because you control the email address. So you don't get shut down, number one. And number two, it's trackable in a way the other software isn't. So definitely urge all of us to build our email database, get every contact you can into it. Congratulations, Melanie Hands, the probate nurse out of Tampa, Florida. Is Tampa the Gold Coast? No. What's Tampa called? The Southern Coast, whatever. West Coast of Florida, Tampa area.
Gulf Coast.
There you go, Gulf Coast. That's right.
Gulf Coast. Emerald Coast is the east.
The Gold Coast is where?
Not sure.
Yeah, there's a Gold Coast of Florida somewhere. Maybe Pensacola? I don't know. Okay, anyhow. Whatever, we're not touring Florida today. Okay, who else? Thank you, Melly. Who else has a question, challenge, problem we can help with today? No?
May I say something?
Please.
I just want to thank you guys because, and hi, Melody. Nice to see you. And thank you for your contribution. I've learned a lot from you.
Okay.
I just took a listing and I sent the pictures to Bruce, and I'll send them to you, of a 4,000 square foot, literally, it's a castle. It was designed after a Germany castle, and it was a probate. And your approach, I did everything verbatim according to your approach to getting the business, putting no pressure on them. And then I have a meeting today with two other probate people, one with four of the most incredible properties and another with six. And they're not working with anyone else. They don't want to go on the market. They want me to bring them a buyer, and I can do it.
Nice.
So this probate pillar in my business is just life-changing.
Wow, so excited to hear it. And so I think, you know, you hit on two heads to go back to answer Philip's question. One is that you can chase down the same people, or you can have an impact on so many people that the few that come to you are motivated more. And I'll just be honest with you, to go back to Philip, I don't follow up on really anybody unless an attorney refers the customer. Then I'm really following up for the attorney referral relationship. But when consumers call me up, I don't follow up with them, because if either they get me and want me, or they don't. And I think second, Douglas is also looking for higher profile cases that are going to bring more money, more properties. I became the official broker of record for a property management company that has the owner died. He has 24 properties. The probate attorney brought me in. I helped him find a property manager to act as a fiduciary for the estate. And I'm the broker of record for the business at this point. So this is about maybe looking for some big game rather than small game one at a time houses. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. Patiently, we have Stephen Hughes hand up. Melanie hands Stephen Hughes, but Stephen Hughes has his hand up. I feel like it's a tongue twister today, guys. I don't know what you guys are doing to me. What's going on, Stephen?
Hey there. I don't know what's going on with Zoom. Anyways, can you hear me?
Yep.
Awesome. Great. So the question I had for you, it's kind of funny. I, you know, sometimes pass on a couple things to investors, but I have started to get into doing some of that on my own. And I guess that maybe this is more of a mindset thing. I was really frustrated because I passed a deal not too long ago, and I lost on, I think, like $180,000 in net profit when it was really simple stuff. And I'm curious, because people are all kinds of things here, you know, wholesalers, investors, agents, brokers. I have a separate legal entity for it. The question I have, I think, is with relationships. I have a house in a community where normally it's an investor I've partnered with. And the last deal I gave them, they just didn't compensate me in a good way. They really didn't. It was kind of a shame. They made a lot of money. And I don't know why it hit on that one, but they said, oh, you made good money. I'm like, well, not really. Not with what you made. It's not even close. I have a lead where I can basically buy the place, we'll flip it, and we'll have about a 60% ROI after everything's done. And I don't know what, I feel a little weird about it, because I had that relationship with this investor, and really it kind of got me into some of this stuff. I learned a lot by observing them and such, but I don't know, maybe I need permission to say, is it okay to cut ties from that sort of thing? Because in the end, I have a family and a business. Why should I leave literally tens of thousands of dollars on the table when I'm going to make a fraction of that? And I probably, well, I know I can do a better job than them, because I have in the past. It makes me think a little bit about your lawyer story earlier. I'm curious for your thoughts.
You know, when you find people who are honorable and have integrity and value long-term relationships, they're very rare. You know, I'm 65 years old. I've been married since 1986. So that's 30, it'll be 37 years, 38 years in November. Most people don't. Most people don't have the integrity to last that long, like my wife does. In business, the best, most dear partners in my career ran when they thought money was coming out of their pocket. Well, I mean, given the time to understand how things were, I had a partner, in a very lucrative deal that we were going to make a fortune on. And he ran off because money was missing, and he assumed it was because of my lack of oversight on the staff. It turned out it was his assistant was embezzling from him, which he found out after he left. And so, you know, I've been vindicated a few times in my career, but that doesn't help why did that relationship not last? And the answer is most people aren't suitable for a relationship. They look at things transactionally, and that's just how they are. And when you find that exception, it's an exception. And in the meantime, you need to find a business model that helps you, you know, reduce some of that friction. So that model might be, you know, whether you're an investor or not an investor, or whether you're a realtor versus a wholesaler. You know, for me, I found that, you know, full disclosure, because some of you are on the phone, that recruiting agents to a company just doesn't pay off in the long run. It's a lot of work. Agents don't appreciate it. But eXp offered a format where there's revenue share that changed the model. And so I could fit in that model. And same with attorneys and investors. You know, I have investors who would say, oh, if you you know, get this property for me, we'll let you list it when we sell it, and often would not. And I got burned a couple of times. I just realized, you know, to them, that's a lot of money, and their integrity is very thin, and the $10,000, $20,000 exceeds the value of their integrity. And by the same token, I've heard people that I admire talk about the value of integrity and how important it is. So, you know, I just, you know, I'm never surprised when people's integrity underperforms what I think it should. I'm a grown man. I've been around a while. I've seen it happen. And I try not to take it emotional and just say, you know, I set that up with a bad business format. And my answer to you would probably be, you need to think about structuring the business in a way that you're not dependent on somebody to do the right thing, but the process is laid out a little more clearly what's supposed to happen. And I don't know if that helps you or not, but I just don't want, I'm not going to make my business relying on people being integrous. It just doesn't really work.
Well, it's a big problem. I mean, I've ended multiple relationships like that, and, you know, trying to find people is always tricky. And what I keep finding is just, I end up doing more and more on my own, which is honestly helps my bottom line, but it's just a little shameful. Maybe it's growing pains. I mean, I've already had 21 transactions this year, and gosh, I wish I'd had some help on a few of them. And it's just tricky.
Well, I do think that you can find people to delegate things to if you organize your format properly. So, you know, I think you have to really think through how could you redesign what you're doing so that you're not giving somebody something so that they'll do the right thing and pay you back, but they're getting it in a way that generates revenue for you automatically. Right.
Yeah.
So, like I said, referrals work for me that way. And listings work for me that way. Being a fiduciary works for me that way on certain cases I'm doing now. Bring people into my format at the company I'm with works in a way that recruiting didn't. You know, getting people to promise to pay referral fee as soon as they know who you're getting the business from, they all try to cut you out. That's just how it is. People can't help themselves. I'm not saying to be negative. I'm not down on human race. I'm just saying, you know, you can't take an alcoholic and walk him in a bar and expect him to act appropriately. That's just, you know, most people, just their temptation muscle is very weak. So.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
Okay. Well, again, I don't mean negative. I'm just saying, I don't want to put myself or that person in a position where they're going to do something that's out of integrity, but because people generally do. I don't expect much anymore of people. I really don't.
Yeah. Well, I don't disagree. Yeah. I don't disagree, you know?
Yeah. And I'm not saying to be negative at all. In fact, the opposite, you know, I work as a business the way that I get paid and feel good about it. And it works out well. Could I do more if I trusted more people and they were trustworthy? Of course. You see people who are tremendously successful in life and they've developed some amazing relationships. But I think that speaks to how valuable those few relationships that are worthwhile are in your life, and to maximize those. When you find somebody who is trustworthy, we really have to value that more than we do. I think that's the flip side of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Fantastic. Okay, man. Well, thanks for checking in. Okay, Natasha has to run. Great. And Melanie gets a shout out. So Matthew says, in our business, we try to be nice, but that leaves us open to the abuse. It's an enabler. We need to be kind and very different. Yeah, you know, I think first, the other thing I would say is that I do give people a lot of information for free. You know, I let people call me up and ask questions and consult and send property profiles, and people, you know, I do podcasts. Well, how do you do that? Not getting paid for that. it all works out if you create value for people. It also helps you find the people who are worth doing work for. You know, there are people who, and I set limits. There are people who call me what, you know, detailed one-on-one consults. And I'll say to them, come on this call and ask that question. And that way I can share the conversation with everybody. So rather than just being a taker of my time or a taker of my advice, you're now giving because you asked the question publicly. You know, 50 people on the call get to hear it. 20 people get to hear the recording, hear it. And it's recorded for future reference. So that's why I say to people, you know, that makes you from me giving you something to you giving back to the community and helping all of us improve. That's my long-term goal, is to raise the standard of all of us. I'd rather compete in a better better marketplace. So I don't think myself as being taken advantage of when I give information for free. I don't put myself in a position where I have expectations. If I give something to somebody, it's a gift. And if I get anything back out of it, great. And if I don't really have an expectation. It's really more on them. I think the other way to look at it is this. If I give you information and give you information and help you and answer questions and help you, and you don't choose me as your realtor, that's your mistake. I don't really care. I want to work with people who want to work with me. And if you don't appreciate me and don't respect me enough to want to work with me, I'd rather not work with you, because I don't have to argue with you about price reductions and contracts. And I want you to ask me questions as though I'm an expert, not as though I'm some idiot realtor that you're smarter than because you watch Zillow and Redfin all the time. So again, I would say to the attitude I have is I don't mind giving information for free, because if you could recreate my business based on a few answers I give, you know, good luck. Good luck with that. Okay. Other questions, comments? We got a little philosophical today. I'm really focusing on the word courage right now in terms of my own. Oh, look at Lisa. Lisa, that's not fair, honey. You can't do that. That's just not fair. Okay, so I have a podcast I booked guests for, and I was going to record a podcast today at 3. My daughter called me and urgently needs help watching my two grandsons today at 3 o'clock. And so I called the customer and said, I have to reschedule. And I told him why. And I figured if he appreciate that I'm canceling to babysit my grandsons on an emergency, then I guess we won't do business. So who do you got there, Lisa? Oh, quiet. Okay.
Sorry about that. This is little baby Bennett. He just woke up from a nappy, and I get the pleasure of having both of them during the day while I do my work, and it's very pretty nice. Cool. So 2 or 3 days a week, they're up here.
Very nice. Bennett. How old is Bennett? Is it 6 months? 8 months? Yeah.
7 months.
I have one about the same age. His name is Benjamin. Call him Benny.
Benjamin. Okay. They're so fun. I just love it.
And the rest of people that call are, what the hell are you guys doing? and if you don't like it, that's the way it goes. So sorry about that. Okay, Lisa, I'll let you take care of your business there. Thanks. Okay. All right. Enough jealousy of Lisa. Boy, good job, Lisa. Okay. And then Matthew says, we tend to be nice and we're eager for the deal. Forget sometimes. I think you have to have your limits and be clear on your value proposition. Know what you give away and what you don't. There's certain things in my business I'm pretty giving, and there's one or two things that I will say to people. I only share those with people on my team. That's proprietary. I spend a lot of money and time on that. And they'll say, why can't you share that with me? It's public information. No, it's not. And I constructed it and I put it together. And it's just interesting when people find out. I pretty much share a lot of stuff for free. So, and I'm glad to. Okay, questions, comments? Victories, problems. What's your biggest challenge? Mine is figuring out why I didn't close 21 deals this year. I'm so blown away. I can't remember who it was. Out of Utah. Not Matthew. Hughes. Stephen Hughes. How he got 21 deals closed this year, and I don't have 21 deals closed this year. Okay, other questions, comments, challenges? We could wrap up early and save some time. We could just watch Lisa's grandson, Bennett. Matthew Price, hand up. You want to come in?
So, Phil, have you also seen a slowdown in the probate side of the house as far as the real estate is concerned, because a lot of what I'm seeing from where I am in North Carolina, they're wanting to hold on to the houses until the interest rate falls. And that's the number one concern that they've had, is that nobody wants to buy our property until interest rates becomes more manageable. And I don't think that that's going to be a, I don't think that the interest rates are a factor anymore. It's just my spidey senses.
So you think that people aren't selling probate property because the probate has a good interest rate on it, so they're going to keep the property through the probate?
Yeah, and what they're doing is they're keeping it so it's vacant, and it leaves it open for squatters and anything else that happens to it, and trying to advise them that turning it over quicker is going to get them the most back into the estate. But they just seem to think that because of the high interest rates, nobody would be interested.
I've not come across that.
Yeah, I need to understand that, where they're coming from.
You know, I think maybe because I'm in a bigger market than where you are, that there's so much I can never achieve 10% of it. So I don't really worry about it in those terms. I'm more worried about there's enough people who are looking to sell that I'm busy. That might be not true in smaller areas. I'm in Los Angeles, literally the largest probate county in America. So I can just tell you the numbers in LA aren't different in terms of the number of probates, number of real estate sold is the same almost, doesn't vary much. So I haven't seen that. I know the press talks about those things, but I also know the press is a coin flip, whether they're right or wrong. I think it's just whatever they think is going to sell attention. But I haven't come across that. I mean, just in general, if you think about it, most probate homes, 80% of the residents of the decedent. So unless it's a spouse, well, that's natural. They want to stay there. But it's most common that they're going to want to sell the property because they don't live there. And they're not picking that. The thing I try to tell people is, it might be great for you to sell the property and buy invest property. It might be great to have real estate investment property. The question is this house the best suitable house to be investment property? Now, if it has a low interest rate, the answer might be yes, right? If you have a rate locked in at 2.75%, well, maybe you do keep the property for that reason. But that's not that common that somebody dies and has that low rate and at that age doesn't have more equity. So I don't think it's that common, but you know, I would say do some research and get the real stats on it.
Yeah, to me, it's two unrelated issues. Mm-hmm. So it's... I can't see on my board. I have yet, well, you don't see my board. I've yet to be able to draw a line directly to that line of thinking. So I'm thinking that somewhere along the line, they either thought that what they were talking about on MSNBC or something like that is relevant to the probate space, which to me is... You and I are both on the same terms as far as the media is concerned. They're not a friend to anybody.
No, they want to destroy our industry. I think they're just it's just a clear war on the American dream and home ownership. And I think that we have to make sure that we're above the fray. I do think that while it might be true that overall in the market, many homes aren't listed because of low mortgage rates on those homes. That's why there's so much, because there's so little inventory that sells all my probate homes for me. So I think there's some of that. I mean, I have properties under escrow that people are sending me offers on because they're so desperate. Buyer's agents now look at properties that are active and under contract, but not cleared contingencies as potential inventory to show their buyers. That's how desperate they are. Which is great. So if you're going to sell your house, it's a great time to sell your house, at least in LA. It's not true everywhere, for sure. Fantastic. And Doug's asking if you're contacting info, Matt. So if you guys don't get it together, reach out to me. I have both your info. But hopefully you guys can Douglas and Matthew can share info. Okay, cool. Other questions, challenges, problems? No? Okay. Well,
Bill, I'll circle back to something you said a little bit earlier in regards to you don't do follow-up. You have them come to you. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? I probably have missed a lot of your trainings and don't know exactly what that means.
I think that, you know, first off, I recommend everybody to watch the movie My Cousin Vinny if you're in probate real estate, because you're going to deal with attorneys. It's a funny movie. It's worth your time. I think it's on free on YouTube. There's a scene in there. It's a little difficult for me to talk about the scene because I very much am against making fun of people who stutter. My best friend in high school was a stutterer and went on to do amazing things. And usually stuttering is a result of probably parental mistreatment in my experience. But that said, in the movie, they make fun of this guy who's stuttering, but he's also a bad attorney. And at one point, the client turns to the stuttering bad attorney and says, "You're fired," because he was a bad attorney, and says to the other attorney, "I want you to be my attorney." And I want to think that I want my customers to think that about me. There's a million realtors in America. And, you know, people call, when I talk to a customer, and they'll say, "Well, you know, what's your commission?" You know, I know where we're headed. We're headed into the land that says I could walk into Beverly Hills and there's five real estate offices across the street. And in there, there's probably 2,000 realtors. And any of them would bid to list my house and I'll just pick the cheapest. And if that's what you want, then good luck. And I hope that works out for you. And I do wish them well, but that's not me. I work really hard to be way better than that guy's going to be. I'm much better than almost every other realtor who's not probate focused in the world of probate. Even if you want to pick the high priced, high profile social media guru agent, who I find are usually pretty good. Josh Flagg's really good. Ryan Serhant's really good. When you do transactions with them, they have great teams, but they don't know probate like I do. So if you're just selling your house, good luck. Pick one of them. I don't like, you know, thank you for calling. I'm not going to cry over it, but if you don't know to choose me, that's you, not me. It's a you problem, not a me problem. And how do I do that? Well, I have a YouTube channel and I make sure the customer sees the information and I have an email database and I send out emails to them every week. And so, you know, at some point I've had plenty of people call me back and say, "Oh my gosh, I saw your YouTube channel. I didn't realize you were such an expert in this area. Would you list our property for us?"
Right. Got it.
And so I think the key is to make sure you position yourself in the mind of your realtor and customer as better than the average bear, so people want to work with you rather than somebody else. Because if you're now, again, Mike Ferry's system, it's almost like a marathon race. You're going to outrun the competition by following up harder, more intensely, more phone calls, you know, more fancy boxes and mailers and all that. And if that's what you want to compete on, great. I don't think that's a winning formula in the long run, because there's always somebody will make more phone calls than you. There's always somebody who will spend more money than you. They might go broke because they don't know they're spending too much, but you don't want the competition to be who's spending more money to look better or spending more time chase people down. You want to be, I think you want the competition to be who is better, to be better. And so I work really hard to show that the customer the distinction and what I can do to help them. I have agents from these calls who call me all the time and say, "Can I see your listing package, pre-listing package?" I don't have one. I send a CMA, which is just right off of the MLS, the actives and solds. I just like a straight spreadsheet because I want to explain it to the customer. I don't want it to be self-evident. Why would you need me? If you could make a CMA without me, then Amazon would list all the property. And I send a listing contract with a estimated net sheet. That's my pre-appointment package, nothing else. Because I want to talk to him about it and explain it to him. I think who I am comes across where they're going to want to work with me. And if you don't feel that about yourself, work on yourself every day so you are that person.
Yeah, gotcha. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure. And I'll just add one last piece. I say this a lot. It was advice I got when I was married. Not that I follow it. I'm great at giving marriage advice. I'm not good at following it, just to be honest. But I got great advice from the rabbi who married us 37 and a half years ago. He said the key to success in marriage, and I think this is true in any relationship, the key to success in a relationship, it's not finding the right partner, it's being the right partner. And so if you work hard at being the right realtor, then the customers will come to you more or stick with you more or choose you more than if you just work on following up on 200 customer leads every day. Okay? Okay, thanks, Phil. Okay, other questions, comments? Boy, and some of the wives on the call, I know, are like, are you kidding me? You're the right partner? I didn't say I was the right partner. I didn't say I was doing the right stuff. I just know the right answer. I don't know. I don't do it every day. That's another level, doing it every day. But I do think I do it in the business. That's my focus in my business. Okay, last question, comment, problem, challenge. Are we good today? What is helpful today? Good to hear, Matthew. Like I said, my high school best friend stuttered. He had a broken home. He had an abusive father, alcoholic mother, nightmare home situation. We were in high school. I met him. I was in debate in high school. And then we both went on to USC on scholarship. He went on to represent the University of Southern California. He was the captain of the debate team, represented them nationally along with me. And at one point, we were like the top number 8 rated team in the country when we were sophomores. So he stuttered in real life, and then he would speak in tournaments, and he was just flawless. It was amazing transformation. And so I learned a lot about that process, being his friend for years. And again, I've always hesitate when I mention that movie because they are making fun of the fact that he stutters as opposed to he's a stuttering bad attorney. Making fun of him being a bad attorney, I think, is fair game. So. Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, it's a historical movie. I don't know why the writer put that in. I look at that and say, if you took out the stuttering, it'd be even better because then the only thing he did was he was a bad attorney. The stuttering kind of makes him sympathetic for being a bad attorney in a sense. So that's it. My only flaw with that movie. Otherwise, it's one of the greatest movies ever. I've only watched it like 100 times. Every attorney has seen it. Just FYI. Anybody, I don't know if I mentioned it in the EARN class, which is how to get earning attorney referrals now program. But I would definitely say watching My Cousin Vinny is critical. Every attorney has seen it. Every single attorney has seen it. And also I would recommend Body Heat, which was a movie in the late 70s, drama, crime movie, but all about a probate case. And it's something you talk to attorneys about. Okay, last questions, comments? No? Going. We do this every Tuesday, 11 a.m. I'm Bill Gross, probatemastery.com. Continue the conversation on the Facebook group, State Professionals Mastermind on Facebook. Sign up for this call. We do it every week. Sign up for Probate Mastery if you haven't. Get certified. Continue the conversation. If you have referrals, questions, see me in the chat box. I'm @BillGrossProbate. Thank you, everybody. Have a great week. Bye-bye.